Okay, so today we actually have a short. We're going to deal with a short story, so it's nice. We can look at all of it relatively carefully. Last week we'd finished a little bit with the story of Noah and the flood and the post flood. So this week we're going to do the story of Migdal Bavel. So we're in Parshas Noah, Perek Yud Aleph, Pesukim Aleph through Tet. So we'll quickly. There's an extra Tanakh over here. Is that you brought? Okay. So it's 9 psukim. We'll read through it, and then we'll try to analyze it from several different perspectives. So the psukim just say as follows: the whole world spoke one language. There was with a common purpose. And when they traveled from the east, they found a valley, the valley of Shinar, and they dwelled there. So they said to their friends, let's make bricks, and let's burn them in fire, and the bricks will serve as stones, and then the chemar, the tar, will function as mortar, vayamru, and then with these bricks, they said, hava nivla nanu ir umigdal roshov hashamayim, let's build a city and a tower, or a citadel, or a fortress that reaches the heaven, v'nasa lanu shem, and we'll make a name for ourselves, penafutz al b'nei chal haaretz, lest we be dispersed in the entirety of the land. So God descended to see this city and this fortress that humanity had built. Hashem said, they're one people with one language, and this is what they do. So it should not be withheld from them what they propose to do. So come, havaner davin avlasham sifatam. Let's mix up their languages. Asher lo yishmu ish tzvat reyo, so they can't understand each other. Vayafetz Hashem otam misham al pnei chal aretz vayachdu levnot ha'ir. So he spread them out over the earth, and they didn't build the city. Al kein krashma bavel. And because of this, this was called Bavel. Kisham balal Hashem svad kal aretz, because Hashem had mixed up their languages, and misham evitzam Hashem al b'nei chal aretz, and from there he spread them out over the whole earth. Right? That's the whole story. It's a very short story. It's a well-known story, but it's a very difficult story to understand what's going on. So there's a lot of questions we have to ask when we read this story. The first is what are they planning on doing? And why does God prevent it from happening? Right? Now, we're tempted because we, grew up this way, and I think in the end of the day it's right, but we'll see that many of the Mepharshim thought this wasn't right, to assume that they're doing something wrong, so God is punishing them. But it actually never says that explicitly in the story. Right? It says that they're doing something that God has to respond to, but doesn't actually say they do anything wrong. We'll see that some of the Mepharshim really do think that they didn't do anything wrong. But if they did do something wrong, it's not exactly clear what they did, because it doesn't really say. It just says that they wanted to build a fortress in a city that reached the heaven, and God says, I don't want that to happen, so he spreads them out and he mixes up their language, but it's not really clear what exactly they did, right? We all grew up with certain assumptions about what it was they did, and we'll see where those assumptions come from, and they're, in this case, I think very well based, but the story itself doesn't tell us what's going on. Now, in addition to the question of this being a story of reward and punishment, or action and consequence, it also seems to be the origin story of the Torah to language, or languages. Now, when we look at the story, maybe we'll do this first, because this is something we do, which is totally different from what we normally do. We'll come back to the thematic issues in a minute, which is, the things that we normally do in the literary analysis here. But leaving aside the reward and punishment aspect of the story, like I said, it's the origin story of language. And one of the interesting things about this story is that I think the language itself, and this is pointed out by a lot of scholars, the language, the very words, the alliteration in the words, seem to try to teach us something about what it means when the Torah is giving us an origin story of language. Right? When you read an origin story of language, you look at it, okay, so it's telling us how languages came into being, and it tells us before that there was one language. But if I asked you, what is the one language that exists before languages? So what would you say?
Hebrew.
Right, so Rashi and Chazal say Lashon HaKodesh. Right, because, you know, there's only one language, so you're going to assume that the language is going to be Lashon HaKodesh. That would be the assumption in the Torah. But the question is there another possibility, and does the text point in a different direction? So academics actually have this nice theory. If I asked you without thinking Hebrew, right, if I just asked you to try to imagine how language developed, right, in human history, right, if you had to guess, right, what would you say the original language looked like? The original attempts at communication looked like between human beings?
Pictures.
What? Like verbal language, even.
Grunts.
Grunting.
Right, grunts. But grunts, right, how would that communicate? Right, right, a good way of thinking of it is like little kids, right? Little kids who don't really communicate. Sometimes when they first start to communicate, how do they communicate? Right. What?
They cry.
Well, they cry. But even once they start verbalizing, babbling, and if they're trying to describe something, what do? They don't know formal language, so what do?
Gestures.
Gestures and?
Facial expressions.
And? Once they start verbalizing, what are the first thing they do? They try to?
They make up words.
They make up words. And how do they make up words? That. And where have they come up with those sounds? They come up with sounds that in some way remind them of what they're trying to describe, right? Like, think of animal sounds, right? Animal sounds, right, the words that we have for them, we attempt to make them sound like the sound the animal makes, right? That's how we come up with them, right? And there are variations on it, right? What does a dog say? So it's ruff or woof, and Israel, huff, but, right, they all, right, but it's all the same, right, sound, because it sounds something like that, right? And there's, before you get to formal language, natural language, right, where, you know, you would just guess that maybe the first language would be some sort of natural language where people were trying to convey something, so they tried to, right, make the language fit what they were actually describing, right? That's, you know, like what little kids do, and when you're first making up a language, that's what you would do. So a lot of academics point out, I first heard this from Roy Clapper, but he was quoting it from several people, was that you seem to actually get a hint that that's what was going on here. And you get that from Pasuk Gimel. Because like I said, what is the defining characteristic of a natural language is that things sound as they are. Right? Right, onomatopoeia. Right? They sound as they are. Right? Right, rough is a, right, like I said, animal sounds, right? It's a very basic, you know, primitive way of talking. In Hebrew, we have a term for this. It's called Lashon Nofel Lashon. That words sound like, right, that which they are. But if you listen to Pasuk Gimel, right, that's actually what you get, right? We just said they have one language, and now just listen to the words. Hava nilbina levenim, let's, right, nilbina levenim is build bricks, but those actually aren't the same words, right? One is, right, those aren't actually the same word, right? Vinishrefa lesrefa, and then listen, vatihilema levena leaven, right, the bricks were as stone. Right, those are not the same shorish at all, but they sound the same. Right, they're lashon nofel lashon. Right, livena and even. Right, have most of the same consonantal sounds. Right, because the bricks were functioning like rocks. Vachemer hayalam lachomer, and the right. What do they? How do we check related translation? The bitumen served as mortar, and all the words in this pasuk are lashon nofel lashon. Right, you have four pairs. And you don't have that at the end of the story. Right? You have no onomatopoeia after this pasuk. Right? God comes down and switches the language, and then the onomatopoeia stops. So many academics have suggested that what the message of the story is that that original language was some sort of natural language where things were related to what they are. Right? It was... Right, and it's trying to indicate that to you by using all these onomatopoeia, right, these lashon nofel lashon expressions to tell you that at some point things were what they seemed, right? You described a brick because it did, you know, it was similar to a rock, right? Now, It's not actually recording natural language, because you can't record natural language, right? Like, that's the point. It's not formal language. But to give you an idea of what the original language might have looked like, they give us the closest that we have, which is Lashon Nofel Lashon, right? That everything was as it seemed. The language was, right? Living na evan, sreifa, sreifa, chomer, chemer, right? So that's one of the sort of interesting claims, that the words itself within the story are trying to indicate that perhaps that original language was this natural language, where words were related to what they were, before the advent of formal language, where once you obviously have formal language, that's not true, right? Once you have multiple languages, we know, right? You can't figure out what someone else is saying. Though certain things you still could, right? Animal sounds, you can basically figure it out, even though in other countries they'll have slightly different sounds. You can figure out more or less what they're talking about because it's natural. You can speak Safa Achat. Right, a kid from Canada, a kid from Israel, will be able to basically figure out they're talking about a dog sound, even though it's huff and woof, because it sounds somewhat the same. But they won't be able to tell kelev and dog, because they're not natural words. So that's just sort of an interesting linguistic point that people make on this story. Okay, but now coming back to sort of the literary things that we do more often. So, like I said, the big question of the story is, what did they do wrong, if anything, and why does God punish them in the way that they do? So what clues do we have in the story, right? What do they say they want to do? So we have one pasuk, right? Pasuk Dalet. Vayomru hava nivne lanu ir, umigdal v'roshov ha-shamayim, v'nase lanu shem, pen nafutz al pnei chol ha-aretz. Let's build a city and a fortress that goes up to heaven, lest we be scattered across the world. So, that's it, right? That's the only thing they said. That's the only time we hear them talking about their plan, and that's what prompts God's response of coming down and seeing what they're doing and preventing it by spreading them all out. Okay, well, what were they doing, right? What was wrong, if anything, with what they just said? Why did God have to intervene? So, right? So, what possibilities do we have, right? What components of this pasuk are there? There's three, right?
Building the city.
Build the city, Rosho Bashamayim, right? So, the problem might be, one, is something about wanting to build up to heaven. Two is Nase Lanu Shem, right? And three is that they're concerned Penafutz al Pnei Kol Haaretz, and maybe there's something wrong with being concerned about that. Those are basically the three possibilities that we have, right? Because, you know, that's, we have one pasuk. So let's start with the possibility that we don't really learn as kids, but it's actually amongst the Pashtanim how all of them understood this story. Most of them understood this story. And then we'll raise the problems with it. The Pashtanim focus in the story on the last part. Pen nafutz al pnei chol haaretz. The problem was that they were concerned about pen nafutz al pnei chol haaretz. Now, what would be the problem with pen nafutz al pnei chol haaretz? With being concerned about that? Right? So if we think in Bereishis, right? What is the goal of the world? First command, right? Man gets Pro urvu umilu es aretz, right? Procreate and fill the world. And now you have a group of people who are coming together and saying, let's build one city in one place, lest pen nafutz al pnei kol aretz. So the Pashtanim all really looked at this pasuk and said, the problem in the story was they were nullifying God's will of being nafutz al pnei kol haaretz, of spreading out in the world. Now, they divide on whether that was a sin or just a mistake, but they agree that the issue here was that. So if you look in 1, 2, and 3, right, Rashbam, Ibn Ezra, and Radak, the Rashbam says, Hava nivlen lanu ir. The fiapshat macheto dora pilaga. What was the sin of the generation of, right, the Migdal Bavel, right, that was divided? If the problem is, right, part one of the pasuk, that they wanted to build to the heaven, that's not a problem, because al peep shot, if you look through Chumash, the way we describe really big cities is that they reach heaven. That doesn't mean you want to attack heaven. That doesn't mean you're doing anything against God. That's just how you describe it. And if you look at ancient Near East descriptions of their buildings, that is how they write it. The ziggurat was until the heaven. That's just standard. That's just standard writing. Like, it reached, right? And it's also standard, parenthetically, in English. We call them skyscrapers, right? That's what it means, right? It scrapes the sky. Or in the words of the psukim, right? Rosho bashamayim, right? That's a skyscraper, right? Or even what we call it, right? When you look at all of them together, it's the skyline, right? Yeah, because we're saying they're bashamayim. So the Rashbam is saying, what's that? That's not a sin. Saying it, rosho bashamayim, big deal, right? They're just saying we want to build a big tower. So he doesn't like it. Now he skips over part two, which is the Nase Lanu Shem. And he focuses on three, and he says, Ela lefi shetziveim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, peru uravu milu es haaretz. God had said, procreate, fill the world, v'heim bacharu lahem makom lashevet sham, and they chose one place, v'amru, pen nafutz, lefikach hefitzam, misham b'gzeratau. They chose one place, so God dispersed them. And Ibn Ezra in 2, Vashem hefitzam vihu tov lahem. It's good for them. V'chein amar mulu et haaretz. Right, the Ibn Ezra takes the position that it wasn't even a sin at all. It's not totally clear whether Rashbam thinks it's a sin. It seems like he does. But the Ibn Ezra says it's not even a sin. They wanted to be part of a one big city, and Hashem thought that was bad for them, so he scattered them. But it wasn't like they did anything wrong. They made a mistake, but they didn't sin, so God didn't punish them. He just, you know, fixed the problem. Right? That's a, right, Ibn Ezra. Who told them? That's a good thing for them. Now, Rashbam seems to think it's a sin. Right? The sin was they were not being milu et haaretz. They were not filling the worlds of God. Punished them, or I don't know if punished is the right word. He prevented them from sinning by spreading them out. Right? I don't know if it's really a punishment. Right? The Ibn Ezra thinks it's not a punishment at all. The Rashbam, it sounds like there was some element of sin, but I don't know if it's a classic punishment. All he did was undo what they were. Right? He didn't like do anything bad to them. He just undid the bad plan. The Radak does think it was a sin, but again, he thinks the sin was this. He says in 3, B'nei Adam, be'emet, B'nei Adam, sholchem achar tavat libam, v'lo yifnu l'mase akel. Right, human beings, these human beings were going after their desires and weren't turning toward the will of God. Kihura li yishuv ha'aretz mimizrach l'ma'arav. God wanted the world to be settled from east to west. They wanted to live in one place and thereby nullify God's will. We'll hold that just for one second. Now, the Rashbam and the Radak, well, again, they focus on this pen nafutz or penekal arad. They do think there's a sin. Now, why do they think there's a sin? Because simply, Vayered Hashem lirodet emigdal shebanu b'nei Adam, right? The Vayered is in general quite ominous, right? God comes down to stone also. So, Vayered doesn't sound like God's just coming like, oh, they seem to be making a mistake, and I'm just going to undo the mistake. It does sound like there's reward and punishment. It's an ominous sounding thing, and that's what he picks up on. And then he tries to figure out, then why is this language used here, not in the Mabul? V'nei binyan Mabul lo marshon liyirida eloshon ri'iya v'yar Hashem ki rabah ra'ad ha'adam ba'aretz. So why then yirida here? L'fishe inyan yirida v'binyan ishtadlud l'chor adavar l'ashkiya halav. Because this one required, you know, God wasn't just destroying. He wasn't looking from afar. He was punishing, yes, but he so to speak, had to come down to figure out exactly how to deal with it, right? There's different types of punishments, right? There's punishments where, like, okay, this is just, you know, I'm starting over, like, forget it, I'm firing all of you, and I'm starting again. And then there's the one, okay, their mistakes have been made, you know, let's come. There's going to be consequences, but let's figure it out if we can move on from here. So he says, this, it may have been a sin that required, you know, punishment and God to be involved, but God wasn't just punishing and destroying. He was trying to fix the problem, so he had to come down, right? Not look afar. It's not the, right? It's God being imminent, so to speak.
Right?
Okay, and then he says, or in different places, also he says, the Mabul is the whole world, right? He's just looking at the whole world, like from afar, like he's standing over the world and said, this is just a disaster, right? As opposed to here, it's a little city, so he comes in, right? He's not looking from afar, he's getting involved. So you have all these Pashtunim who think that either there was no sin at all, there was a sin, but the sin was simply that they were supposed to be spread out. So God punished, sort of punished, didn't really punish, he just undid their desire. And instead, made them live spread out amongst the world by making they couldn't communicate with each other. And that's sort of shot one from the Pashtunim in the story. Now, that is not the version we learned growing up. And I think for good reason, right? Chazal have a totally different understanding, but here Chazal have a lot going for them in Pshat. Now, if you look already in the Ramban, we'll look at Rashi, right? The Ramban notes. He says, "Vansheya plagal divrei rabbeinu mordim bibaram." He quotes right away. Chazal say they were. This wasn't simply that they didn't want to be spread out in the whole world. They were rebelling against God. Virodfei apshat. Said those who run after the simple understanding, meaning the Ibn Ezra and the Radak, and you could add the Rashbam, Omrim Shaloya Datam El Shiyu Yachan Mechubarim, Ki Gida Katuv Datam Penafut, said their only goal was to be together. Velosi Paralimin Acher, V'im Kidevrahem Yu Tipshim. And the Ramban says, look, I don't like that, not just because it doesn't sound like that's the sin, but very simply, that's stupid. Right? Im Kidevrahem Yu Tipshim. What are you really? That was it? They thought that the whole world is going to fit into this city for the rest of time? Like, nobody builds a city and thinks that the whole world. Okay, so God said spread out amongst the whole world. They didn't want to, they wanted to build a city. In two generations, in three generations, you're going to have kids, and you're going to have to expand, right? Toronto went from being down south, to being here, to up in Thornhill, to up to Richmond Hill, right? That's just the way things are, and you might want everybody in the same shul, and that's really nice for 10 years, 20 years, and then when your kids get married, they need to find another shul, because you just keep expanding. This is, right, it's ridiculous to say that they thought that they weren't going to spread in the whole world, because they built one city. What, they thought they weren't going to have children? Right? What did they think? They weren't going to have children? Right? You can't honestly tell me that the problem was that they thought that the goal of people was to never have children. And there's no indication in the Psukim that their goal was to build one city and never have children so they would never in the future spread out. So the Ramban already explains why, even on the level of Pshat, focusing on Pen Nafutz al Pnei Kol Aretz is problematic. Whether you think that there was no sin, even if you think the sin was they didn't want to fill the world, how is this not filling the world? It's just delaying filling the world until the next generation. It's natural expansion, which is not per se a bad thing. So, he quotes, so what did Chazal say? Chazal said they were mordim bivoram, they were rebelling against God. Now, where do Chazal get that from? So, there's a combination here, right? There's two other parts, as we said, to the Pasuk. One is Rosho Vashamayim, and the other is Naseh Lanu Shem. So Chazal focused primarily on Rosho Vashamayim. Right, if you look, skip to 5, to Rashi, right? Dvarim Achadim, Bo Beitza Achat, V'amru Lo Kol Eimenu Sheyavor Lo Eta, Shibur Lo Eta Elyonim, Na'ale L'Rakia V'Naseh Imo Milchama. Right, we want to fight God. Davar acher al yichido sholam. Right, and maybe the words dvarim achadim means we want to fight on the yichid, the echad. Right, with God Himself. Davar achad udvarim achadim amru achad le'elav v'sheish meod v'chamishim v'sheish shanim harakiyah mitpotet. Alternatively, they thought that every 1,656 years, which is the Mabul, the heavens collapse. Right, let's go and put support beams on the sky so it doesn't collapse. But Chazal say they were trying to rebel against God, and they focus on the first phrase here, that we're going up to heaven. The Ramban focuses on the second phrase. If you, right, so go back to Ramban. He says, shame. The problem was that they wanted to make for themselves a name, the Yada, and they knew kama hashior sheyizmu b'migdal asoto. If you understand what they're trying to do, you'll understand the problem. Because they had a bad thought, namely, that they wanted to make a name for themselves. The punishment for wanting to make a name for yourself is to be spread out, to have no reputation. This was heresy. And their sin is like the sin of their father, namely Adam. And that's why Chazal tie it in. Asher banu b'nei Adam, Amar Reb Brachya, ma b'nei Chmaria, b'nei Gamlaya. These are the children of donkeys, the children of camels. Elu banai Adam kadma. Right? What do you think? B'nei Adam, they are human beings as opposed to what? Animals? No. They're the sons of Adam, meaning that's the same sin as Adam. Then the Ramban doesn't explain what he means. Right? He doesn't flesh it out. But he says the problem is nasalanu shame. And this is related to Adam. So what we want to try to do now is try to figure out what their sin was according to these positions of Chazal, right, of the Ramban, right? What are they saying when they say that mankind was trying to rebel against God? Okay. Now, I'll point out, and then we'll come back to this question in one second, just to sort of further deepen this. If you look in 6, this is something that's pointed out by Kasuto, and Ursama just quotes Kasuto as saying as follows, right, to bolster the fact that the problem is a rebellion against God that is typified by the words, Rosho Bashamayim. So Gazuto makes an interesting linguistic point. He says, verse 5 ties together the two halves of the story, serving as its central axis. The Lord descended to observe the city and the tower which the children of Adam had made. The first difficulty is theological. Does God need to descend in order to observe the actions of the humans? So Rashi replies by citing the Tanchuma's words, he did not need to do so, but he came to teach judges not to condemn the accused until they would see and understand the facts of the case. Right, and we saw that the Radak had said Yiridah means that Hashem was, so to speak, coming down, and it was a way of saying that he was getting involved in the nitty-gritty of the case. But Kasuto picks up on something else, which I think is very clever, and he says, no, Kasuto adds, there's a satirical allusion here. They thought their tower would reach heaven. But in God's eyes, their edifice was not giant, but rather the creation of puny creatures, a thing of earth and not of heaven. If God, the dweller of heavens, wanted to see it up close, he had to come down from heaven to earth. Similarly, the words children of Adam at the verse's end, which are strikingly extraneous, prompt Rashi to ask, rather, the children of whom? Perhaps children of donkeys or camels? Kasuto attempts to see here as well satirical allusions. Divine beings did not build the tower, as the Babylonian myth claims, but rather children of Adam built the city and its tower. So, Kasuto is also, you know, picking up on sort of other stories in this period, so that's part of what his discussion is. But he makes a point that there seems to be two satirical elements here that point in the direction, not like the Pashtanim, but in the direction of Chazal, that there was some sort of rebellion, that Rosho Bashamayim wasn't just, we're going to build a skyscraper, but was something about us reaching heaven. And he says, right, the fact that God's response is, right, it's the overemphasized, right, let me come down to see it, right, let me see what you humans have built, that you, right, this building that you tried to build to heaven to reach God, look what you mere humans have built that I need to descend to see. If that satire is right, it emphasizes the fact that part of the sin, right, if God, you know, it's sort of, right, when someone wants to show that his, right, that he is in control of the situation, right, he doesn't just punish, right, he overemphasizes the mistake that the people made, right, when they misjudge, if their sin is misjudging the power of their opponent or their superior, right, so he will go out of his way to exaggerate how much of a mistake they made, right? Like if someone, right, in, I don't think of a good example. Right, this is like the right. This is like a classic. Any of like the karate movie images, right? The student thinks he can beat his teacher, right? So he he tries to fight him. So to prove that right, this was a mistake for him to fight, the teacher will put one hand behind his back, right, and will deliver one punch that will knock the person out, right? It's you thought you could beat me. Not only can you not beat me. Right? I don't even need to exert my full strength. Or, I'm not even going to deal with this myself. I'll send my, five-year-old son and he can take care of you. Right? That image of you thought you could contend with me, you can't even contend with half of me, you can't contend with, So that's what Casuto is picking up. That here you have these people who think clearly that they're somewhat divine. And that's, I didn't put the whole piece, but he notes that in some of the ancient Near East language, the ziggurats reach the heavens because they're meant to be somewhat divine, right? These religious temples are supposed to reach the heaven because it's a way of man exerting their godliness, right? Their closeness to the, gods. So God, in response, says, I'm going to come down, right? Normally, I don't need to come down. I can just look. But no, I'm going to come down. I'm going to, so to speak, emphasize, in order for me to come and see this puny little thing, right, I gotta bend down, I gotta come down from heaven, see what you're doing, what these humans are doing as opposed to God. So that, I think, emphasizes Chazal's point that there was some level a rebellion against God, and that's what's emphasized here. Right, that God, Vayirad Hashem Lirod, Yirvet Migdal Shebanu Bnei Adam, right, then God says, right, they had one language, they had a joint spirit, so let's right, and that's what they did with their common language, their common culture. Right now I'm going to make sure they can't do it. And again, you see it again, havan nerda. Let me, in order to deal with them, I have to come down, right? There's that word again. I need to come all the way down. Right, I have to come down to switch around their languages, right? So you have this notion that there is some sort of rebellion against God, and God is emphasizing how much folly it is for anybody to think that they could actually fight God. Okay, so that's why, I think, part of why Chazal see in the words Rosho Bashamayim, and they read into other places as well, Dvarim Achadim, this notion that they're rebelling against God, they're in some way rebelling against God, and that God is responding. Now, the next question, though, has to be, well, if they are in some way rebelling against God, well, what is the nature, what is the content of the rebellion? So far we've just said, okay, they're doing something to rebel against God, but what are they doing? So Chazal, if you focus only on the first words, then it doesn't say. It just says, Rosho Bashamayim, and that is somehow rebellious. So Chazal say they're, quote-unquote, waging war against God. But it could be that part one of the pasuk is linked to what we already saw in the Ramban, part two, which is Nasa Lanu, shame. Right, we should make a name for ourselves. Right, and if you think that part one of that pasuk is connected to part two of the pasuk, then maybe we have a hint. Right, so what is Nasa Lanu shame? Right, what is Nasa Lanu shame throughout? Right, throughout the Torah, shame is. It's named sometimes, but it's more used as name or reputation, right? Yad Vashem, right? It's not a name, right? Shame is, right, a commemoration. It's a, right, Yad and shame are both words of commemoration. Nasa Lanu shame is let's make a reputation for ourselves. Now, how do we make a reputation for ourselves? Well, Rosho Vashamayim, right? We can build up to the heavens. We're going to build a fortress that's going to reach the heavens to make a reputation for ourselves. Now, this is a problem, right? This is a potential problem because, right, what should their goal be? Nasashem, not Lanu. Right? You're not supposed to be making a name for yourself. You're supposed to be making a name for God. Now, one way of understanding what they're doing is actually, as Chazal in some of the interpretations say it, actual Avodah Zarah. Now, where would you get that from? Well, it's simple, right? Avodah Zarah, even though it's you're relating to a quote-unquote God, the nature of Avodah Zarah versus monotheism is a religious worship which is self-serving, right? Which is often what you see in Psukim and in, like, if you actually just study, right, paganism, right, in many ways that's what it is, right? It lends itself to, because, right, if gods can come down and they can, you know, they lust after people, right, and they have children with people and have create demigods like Hercules, right? It's a, you know, so then people can claim, leaders can claim that, you know, I am, you know, you can have Paro claiming he is, in fact, one of the pantheon of gods. You can have people, and even when they worship the god because the god serves them, right? I'll give you a carbon so that you give me whatever, water. You give me food. You give me whatever you give me. So when Chazal say that perhaps one of the things they're doing is Avodah Zarah, it's not crazy. Here they are building this huge tower that's supposed to reach the heaven to increase their own reputation, Na'aseh Lanu Shem, which at its core is an attack on monotheism, on the commitment to making living for a god who is not serving you, right? A religious worship which is not self-serving, but is focused on the God himself, right? On his greatness. And that seems to be, even if they're not actually doing Avodah Zarah, right? It could be that the next step would be Avodah Zarah. But even without Avodah Zarah, that itself is a sin. Na'aseh lanu shem, that your existence as a culture should be about making a reputation for yourself, that is a problem. Now, that, I think, is what the Midrash is getting at, right? Which we saw quoted now twice, where the Midrash focuses on the fact that they're b'nei ha'adam, not humans, but b'nei adam, that they are the children of Adam. And if you remember what we talked about last week and 2 weeks ago, right, this seems to be part of the original sin, right? That the original sin, right, you're in Gan Eden, and God asks one thing of human beings, right? Do me one favor. Listen, I'm giving you the world. Enjoy it, right? You're in the Garden of Eden. Enjoy it. Eat from everything. As long as you recognize that I'm in charge. That's the only thing I ask, right? Recognize that I'm in charge. Don't eat from the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. Now, it's not just that I gave you one command. If you, what is the sin, as we talked about, of eating from the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra? You're trying, as the Nachash himself said, to be like God. You're trying to be a Yodea Tov V'Ra. And in fact, God himself says, I have to kick you out because now Adam is like one of us, Yodea Tov V'Ra. Right? The first sin is that people were trying to be like God. They didn't recognize their place. They didn't recognize that to have a relationship with God is to not to try to be God, is not to be focused on making yourself into God, but is to recognize that you're a human being and your greatness is by recognizing that God is the judge of all things, that God is he who decides Tov V'Ra. The punishment for that was being kicked out of Gan Eden. Then we saw at time two that happened again in the time of Noach. Time two is in the time of Cain and Hevel, right? That Cain is upset that his carbon doesn't get accepted. Instead of recognizing he made a mistake, right, he asserts that it must be that God is wrong and not me, so he kills his brother. And this time, again, the punishment is Galut, right? This time, first time it was Galut from Gan Eden, second time it was Galut from anywhere. Then you eventually have the point where it's gotten so egregious that God just has to destroy the world. You can't be on earth anymore. This seems to be a mini story of that, right? Here you have a population which is dedicated not to recognizing that God is the one you have to serve and you have to glorify, but Na'aseh Lanu Shem. Let's join together and create a culture which is focused on aggrandizing humanity. So what's the punishment? Again, Galut, right? They don't want you to be spread out, because when you're spread out, right, you can't create glory. You can't create a glorious culture, right? You're spread out. You're fending for yourself. You know, a few people here, a few people there, right? You don't create cultures. You create, right, whatever, right? You know, there isn't, you know, there isn't glory in, there's like a simple beauty out in the country, but there isn't like a impressive, how could mankind do this, right? When you think of the you know, the things that mankind has done to make itself feel important, it's the Great Wall of China, and it's, you know, the Taj Mahal, and, you know, the Empire State Building, right? Cities with, you know, built up with these huge, you know, pieces of architecture, beautiful pieces of architecture, or, you know, beautifully constructed gardens surrounded by, that's, right, that's when humanity is creating glory. You don't, when you're nafutz al pnei kol haaretz, right, it's nice to go out into the country, but there isn't, right, no one looks at it and says, wow, right, mankind is great, right, this is the great glory of the world. So here you have a culture which doesn't want to be in that situation where they're spread out in the whole world, where they can't create a glorious culture, can't create a reputation, can't make a name for themselves. They don't want to be focused on God. They want to be focused on themselves. So God says, okay. So the punishment is simply going to be, it's not going to be, right, that terrible. Punishment is just going to be, you can't do that. You can't communicate with each other. You can't create a culture. You got to spread out. Right? You want to join together and make a name for yourself. I don't want it. Right? So, okay, so you don't have, if you can't communicate, you can't create a culture. You can't create a culture. You can't create glory for yourself. So you're left to create glory for, right, God. Right? You're not, you know, go. Right? This is not like a, however you look at it, it's not a punishment in the same everything else is that we've seen until now, you know, destruction of the world and death and galus. It's galus in service of making sure that they can't, right, fall into that trap. Right? We're not going to let you build a culture built on the wrong foundation, nasa lanu shame, so good. I will be mefitz, right? I will spread you out. I'll play. That's what you were worried about. Okay, that's fine. That's what you're worried about, but that's what's going to happen. So at the focal point of the story seems to be this notion of of shame, right? Of their commitment to making a reputation for themselves, and the problem being that they're not committed to making, worrying about God's reputation. And if you notice, now if we look back at the story, shame or words that are linguistically the same as not are the same word as shame, but not actually shame, appear many times through the story, which this is what Shadal used to call a light fart, right? The word that appears many times in the story that seems to point in the direction of the theme. So if we look just back at these nine psukim, right, we have many times that either the word shame comes up or words that sound like it. So first pasuk, second pasuk, so we have sham, which is not actually shame, but it is the same words as shame. Right? It's spelled the exact same. So if you were looking at it and not reading it out loud, you would see shame. Right? And then you have the, if we skip to Pasuk Dalad, which is the center, Naselanu, shame. And then if you skip to Zion, again, you have the Havaner Davin Avla Sham Sefatam. Again, this Sham, which is superfluous, right? Why does God have to go there? Right? He could have just said Havaner Davin Avla Sefatam. I'm going to go down, I'm going to switch it. But no, you put in Shin Mem again into the story, which doesn't need to be there. Asher lo yishmu ish tvad re'eu, v'yavet otam misham, al pnei chal aretz, v'achdilu livnot ha'ir, al kein kara shema bavel, ki sham bala Hashem, tvad chal aretz, u'misham mefitam, al pnei chal aretz. You have shame and sham over and over and over again in the story. So if you, and especially if you were looking at it and not reading it, you would have seen shame, I think, six or seven times in a course of nine psukim. So there is a lot to suggest that the problem of this of the Dora Pilaga was this focus on their own shame, and God's solution to it is to spread them out so that they can't build up their own reputation, their own legacy, and instead they'll realize that they're supposed to be working on God's legacy. And that, I think, right, again, just to summarize the different positions, and then we'll just point to how this continues after this story is finished. Right, so we have the three potential parts of their sin, right? The Rosho Vashamayim, right? This notion that they're rebelling, that something, in some way, they're rebelling against God. Two, na'aseh lanu shame. There's something wrong with wanting to make a reputation for themselves. And third, penafutz al penei chal ha'aretz, that they don't want to be spread out. So the pashtanim focus on the end, and either they say there was no sin at all, they just made a mistake and didn't realize that God wanted them to be spread around the whole world, which is the position of the Ibn Ezra, and God just had to undo that. It wasn't a punishment, it was just he was undoing the mistake, or that itself was the sin, that they didn't want to fill the world and be Mekayim Pruvum Eluid Aretz, so God forced them to do it, which is Rashbam and Radak. Then you have the Ramban's rejection of this, which is, obviously, they didn't think they were going to stay there forever, and if they didn't think they were, as long as they thought they were going to have children, they understood that eventually they would have to spread out, so that can't be the sin. So then Chazal's first position focuses on the first part of the pasuk, Roshov Vashamayim, that they're actually trying to create it to the heaven, trying to rebel against God, create a war against God, and therefore God punishes them, right, not just by spreading them out and preventing them from, you know, building their tower, but by emphasizing that they can't do that, right? He has to come down to see it. They're mere human beings, vayered, to see what the Bnei Ha'adam built. And then the third part of it is Na'aseh Lanu Shem, which is the light vort throughout the story, that it appears over and over, that they wanted to make a name for themselves. They wanted to build their own reputation at the cost, at the expense of recognizing God's place. And a punishment is that he doesn't let them build a culture. He doesn't let them build a glorious city and a fortress here in Bavel. He forces them to spread out, because when you're spread out and you're, you know, across the world, you can't create a culture. You can't create huge architecture that focuses on your, you know, cultural legacy. Which means that you'll be redirected to think about the important things. And at the beginning, we just noted that the other thing that's going on in the story, besides the reward and punishment, is the story of how did we get language, where we suggested that perhaps what's going on is that there was, at some point, this natural language, which you see from all the Lashon, Nofel Lashon, which eventually becomes formal language in this story. Now, we'll discuss this more next week, but just to sort of point in the direction that the rest of Sefer Bereishis takes, if it's true, the way the Midrash presents it, that this is not just their sin, but this notion that mankind has a perpetual problem, that they always, always, always want to make a name for themselves. They want to, right? They don't want to recognize that their job is to recognize God's place in the world, but always be focused on their own reputation. And that fails with Adam, and it fails with Cain, and it fails with Noach, and it fails with Dor HaPelagah. So then eventually, it's got to succeed, right? God keeps rethinking his plan, so to speak. Well, not even so to speak, right? God says he's rethinking his plan, right? He rethinks it multiple times, and it keeps not working, right? So what we're waiting for is a plan that's going to work, where we're going to have somebody, for the first time, who's not obsessed with himself, who's not obsessed with his own reputation, who is devoted to making a name for God, right? If, in fact, shame is supposed to be the important thing here, so we're only going to find a solution when somebody cares about the shame Hashem. And that is going to be, right? That is going to be, yeah, Avram, right? That's going to be, surprise, surprise, that's going to be plan, whatever we're at now, right? C, D, and whatever we're at in Bereishis, right? This is the next plan. In Bereishis, it is the choosing of Avram, as opposed to choosing the world, or choosing, you know, the world again through Noah, or choosing this city, is to choose an individual who seems to get it. And as we'll see, but just to, right, just to see it for a second, now, right, if we just look at the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, right, we'll see that, first of all, shame is going to be important right away. Not actually Avram being Korei B'Shem Hashem, but what becomes important right away is God promises him that if you come with me, I will make a name for you, Agadla Shemecha, right? And Avram is perpetually described as, here, Pasuk Chet's a good example, right? Pasuk Chet in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, is the first thing he does after this whole speech with God, is Vayatek Misham Ahara Mikedem Levet El Vayet Oalo Beit El Miyam Vahai Mikedem Vayivin Sham Mizbeach La Hashem Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. He's going to be Korei B'Shem Hashem. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean Tefillah? Does it mean he starts espousing monotheism? Whatever it means, and we'll come back to what it means in the Avram story. The point is that Avram, which is the next story, is described as a person who is Korei B'Shem Hashem, and who, in fact, is told that his shame will matter, that his reputation will matter, but not because he tried, but because God is going to be Megadel Shmo. God is going to make his name great because he is Korei B'Shem Hashem. And we'll find that this theme, that Avram, right, is the reason that Avram becomes plan whatever we're on, right? Plan 3, 4, 5 of Sefer Bereishis, is because that perpetual problem that we've had since Adam, of people who were attempting to, who were trying to be, right, who were trying to be, you know, God and take the kavod for themselves, right, and that keep not working. The solution is going to be when someone is Korei B'Shem Hashem, and we'll see that this is going to be the story of Avram. This is going to be eventually the story of Yitzhak with a few hiccups along the way. And that, you know, this is, you know, we mentioned Rabbi Liebtag before, right? This is, right, Rabbi Liebtag, he calls this his, right, the Dor HaFlaga Vort, is the Korei B'Shem, right, is the Nasa Lanu Shem Vort. That those three words are the words that basically drive Sefer Bereishis. That we go from a multiple, right, 26, right, 20, you know, three generations of attempts to, by people, sorry, 20, 21, we're up 21, right? 21st generation of the world. 21 generations of people, 20 generations coming to the 21st, of people who try to be Korei B'Shem Atzmam, right? And eventually, right, after all the plans don't work, the plan of choosing all of humanity through Adam, the plan of choosing all of humanity through Noah, the plan of choosing a city, right, here in this first, you know, formative city here in Babel, God moves to his next phase of history, which is I'm going to choose a person who's going to build a family, who's going to build a nation, which is going to be Korei B'Shem Hashem. And Bereishis is the story of how we went from universalism to, you know, winnowing it down to a person and a family, because it didn't work starting big. So we had to start small, right? And that those three words, Nasa Lanu Shem, are really the axis that the story hangs on. That Bereishis, you know, has been going down, 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 down. We start going up, 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 right, towards building the Jewish people once we change Nasa Lanu Shem to be Korei B'Shem Hashem. So that's what we'll continue with next week, with Avram, Noach, Avram, Yitzhak, etc.